Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Press record. I guess I'll press record then, shall I? Or something.
Do it. Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We are here after the first round of Six Nations matches, the most rugbyest time of the year. Happy Sixmas, as I've noticed it's been called by some people.
Very clever. I see what they've done there.
Whoever came up with that, very clever. Thank you very much for listening. We're Egg Chasers. I'm Tim. That's JB.
Hello, Timothy.
That there is Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Phil, one day away from the due date of your firstborn, I gather.
Correct.
Glad to see you here. Glad to see you here.
Yeah. Well, nothing's happened yet, so I can be here, can't I?
So, the thing is about Phil, right?
The thing is about Phil. Yeah. Go on. Where's this going?
This feels like diversionary tactics already. get me off the topic of conversation. quick. Go on.
Yeah, the thing is about Phil. When you listen to him, you think spreadsheets and all the rest of it. But the other thing you need to know about Phil, he's an incredibly vain man. So, loves the gym, purely for aesthetics now. Always well turned out. But today you've done your hair like Nicola Sturgeon. What's going on, mate?
It's just getting a bit long.
It's a little bit long.
Going for a bit of a new look.
Yeah. Interesting.
Honest answer is, because we're not on Facebook Live. Yep. Or YouTube or anything at the moment, I don't really need to bother, do I?
Exactly right.
No, you don't. You can find us on YouTube, on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast. Lots and lots of fun stuff's been back and forward there over the weekend. We'll get into that very soon.
Where?
On Twitter. That cesspit that I love to roll around in.
For someone who describes it as a cesspit, you really, really get involved in the cesspit sometimes,
Tim.
Oh,
yeah. Too right. And also on Facebook, and I don't know if you've seen it, boys, but I've put up a little video today.
Oh, I haven't.
Of how England beat Ireland.
How did they beat Ireland?
Well, they scored more points than them.
That's good. That's good.
But that's a spoiler. But if you want to go and see that video, that's on our Facebook page as well.
So excellent. Well done, you.
Find Egg Chasers. Now, I want to start with this little tweet to at Rugby Podcast from Hugh, who says, I cannot wait for the next Egg Chasers podcast.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you, Hugh.
It's still early, but hashtag downfall 2019 is off to a rocky start.
It is, isn't it? It is.
Jonathan Beardmore is going to be sweating like the Labour front bench when their previous endorsements of Venezuela are mentioned.
They stopped investing. It's not been tried before.
So, Phil, can we just recap? I mean, the whiteboard, I think we might have to have a ceremonial burning of the whiteboard in this podcast, because on the whiteboard there has been France will win the Six Nations.
Okay, well, that's not done yet.
It's not done yet.
No, it's not done yet. And Eddie Jones will lose his job in England, downfall 2018. Etc.
Okay, yeah. It's not on the board. Those things aren't on the board. France is on the board.
Marcus Smith to start for England as fly half in the World Cup.
Not looking good.
What other things has he said? If you had the choice, you would. Owen Farrell shouldn't be England's 10, and you'd have Danny Cipriani starting, and Farrell not even on the bench.
If you were playing my style of rugby, yes. That is exactly what would happen. And maybe they should, which we'll get to later.
Interesting. So you must be feeling a little bit battered and bruised. Your ego must have taken a slight
not really. I mean, I would say... Should we just talk about the England match? Should we just get straight into it?
No, let's just talk about you first.
your usual favourite subject.
Okay, so I will explain my reasoning later, but actually, if you're an England fan, There are reasons to be enormously worried. And we'll get onto all of that later. So, yes, it was a great win. A tremendous victory. But there are reasons to be worried.
What a fantastic first weekend in general, though.
Brilliant. I mean, every game had drama. I was going to say they all lived up to expectations, but actually, that Wales game, except for the result, was an absolute pig of a match.
So, watching it with no skin in the game, I was fascinated just because of how kind of chaotic and unpredictable it was.
Yeah.
If I supported Wales or France, or as you kind of do, kind of both of them now, I would have hated to watch that game.
I've never been so upset with a Wales win. I was actually devastated.
As a neutral, it was like fascinatingly chaotic and unpredictable.
Yeah,
that's the best way I can describe it.
There were some stunning moments of glorious rugby in the Scotland game from the Scotland team.
Yes. And Italy scored a couple of good late tries.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I don't know how much credit I give them for that, really.
No.
Yeah, a bit like garbage time tries. But, you know, hey, they scored. And then there was the brute power of England.
Mm.
Brutish.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, before we get into that, why don't I just read...
All of my no tweets, because I stopped tweeting yesterday about 4 o'clock.
Why don't I read a quote from former Ireland boss Eddie O'Sullivan?
Oh, yes, please.
Who said, and wait, for I'll point when I need you, JB.
Yes, okay.
Eddie O'Sullivan said in The Times on Saturday, I read this on Saturday morning, and I quote, "You go through the two teams and pick a combined England-Ireland 15. The only two English guys you go for are Maro Itoje and Billy Vunipola. Using that as a barometer, this will be Ireland's day. England have a back row and midfield in turmoil, an average scrum half, and their pack is so-so. That's me looking at it logically. Today isn't where Ireland have to look out for booby traps. That will be our last game of the campaign in Cardiff."
Oh, poor Eddie. Hey, but he wasn't alone.
And you were thinking we were going to be saying poor Eddie about a different Eddie.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't alone. And those in this room predicted an Ireland win.
Yeah,
We all did.
I must admit, I got very, very edgy about my prediction about Thursday when I saw that England team. I thought, hang on a minute. These aren't a bunch of clowns. In fact, far from it. And the main thing which gave me pause for concern was the England pack. I just looked at it and thought, actually, that's bloody powerful. I still didn't think they'd win, and I still thought the backs would let them down. And I also thought, you know, Manu Tuilagi can't possibly play like vintage Manu, but he could. Well, and it made a world of difference.
It was interesting because Manu played solidly. He didn't do anything spectacular.
You don't think?
No.
Theodore Roosevelt quote, speak softly but carry a big stick.
Yeah, I thought he's brilliant.
Like, having him there made a difference.
Well, that's actually the biggest thing. So his presence sucked in defenders. So if you watch the first try in 90 seconds when Johnny May goes over,
exactly,
that the space was created because Keith Earl dives straight in on Manu, leaving two men outside him. If Keith Earl holds off, because there was other guys inside Earls, if Earls holds off, there's no try, and Earls takes down either Daly or May with a drift defence.
Yeah.
It was almost like the decoy of Manu was enough to disrupt what is a sensational Ireland defence.
And on that first try, again, the pass had to be made, and I'm surprised how little it's been talked about, but I think that's because it was Owen Farrell that did it. If Bowden Barrett had done that pass, if Johnny Sexton had done that pass, if Danny Cipriani had done that pass,
oh my word,
it would have been headlines. Wonder pass.
That pass was absolutely sensational. He took out three defenders and he had his hands on the ball for a fraction of a second. It was absolutely magnificent.
Yeah, because the ball came back kind of unexpectedly quickly, didn't it? Because Billy Vunipola got an arm free. So Owen Farrell wasn't expecting it. And yeah, instinctive, world-class finish.
Instinctive genius.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. So it was a very good display. Would you like to know why you should be worried as England fans? Because you should be. You should be terrified.
I would definitely not get ahead of... As an England fan, I would not like the team to get ahead of themselves. Because it was a good performance, but it's
The World Cup now. That's
it. It's one good performance.
I'm already. You know, I've got a little statue in my loft room.
Oh, the JB Cup.
Got a little statue.
So it is.
Got a little like one of those grog type statues of Martin Johnson with the World Cup. I'm already imagining like putting the Owen Farrell one next to it. We've already won the World Cup, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. You're done.
We just beat the team that beat the team by Dean Ryan logic. We're best in the world now.
Exactly.
Should be world number one.
Yeah.
So go on.
So both teams have got real, real big questions to answer now. Ireland, first of all, have got a problem because they are still probably the best team in the world. Probably. Okay. But what's been shown now is the architecture to beating them. Okay. We have a formula now, and the way they lost is really disappointing because they didn't lose because one team just played really superb rugby and outplayed them. They lost because they got beaten up and bullied and out-pressured. And that's exactly what they did to the All Blacks. Mm. That's how they beat the All Blacks. So I guess if you've got a team in front of you which is technically superior, and I would still say Ireland are technically superior, well, you just beat them up. And that's the most disappointing thing because they couldn't front up and take on England, which tells me that, if they play 20 games against world-class opposition, Ireland probably win more games against those opposition than England. But if it's a World Cup final and they were to face England and England come all guns blazing, they don't have the physicality to deal with England or anyone. So, France could easily replicate that, or South Africa could replicate that. That's a problem.
Or Wales could replicate that.
Yeah,
I think all those things, I think, just to expand on the point that you're making there a tiny bit, England did beat them up, and there were two facets to it in my mind when I was watching that. There was one, the upfront battle, and by that, the scrum, the line out, and particularly the ruck. Mm. And I thought England's back row, I thought Wilson and Curry were sensational, disrupting and securing. The other side of that is the defensive line and the speed of the defensive line. And we saw that time and time again where Ireland were trying things, they were knocking on the door, and guys who normally are so good at getting territory, like Bundiaki, like Ringrose, like Stockers, were just getting kind of swarmed and swamped, and it meant that Ireland had to rely more heavily on the kicking game. And I think that both Sexton and Conor Murray were slightly off on their kicking game and out-kicked by their opposite numbers.
But I wonder, they just couldn't settle down. They never felt like, they were kicking, but when they kick effectively, everyone around them is expecting the kick, it's part of the game plan, and they can get an effective chase on. Well, they're kicking because they're forced to, and therefore none of the teammates are ready. They're not able to go hunt those balls, and that's England's pressured them.
There was a lot of reactive kicking rather than proactive from Ireland. Yeah, and I totally, just to echo what Phil said,
What about what I said?
No, because you were layering on top of what Phil already said. You were saying Ireland weren't proactively kicking as they normally do. Mm. They were having to kick at times they didn't want to, kick the ball away because they were under pressure. And the impact of, John Mitchell.
All right.
The impact of John Mitchell is right there. And the thing that was really noticeable about England's defence is how tight they were. Like 13 of the defensive line, or 12 or 13 men, were so close together.
Yeah.
Almost like saying, have the wings, Ireland. All yours. Go for it.
Well, the other thing about the defence as well, and this is what is truly astonishing. In fact, both sides of the ball. I was watching the England defence realign, and I thought, they were sprinting into position. They couldn't be working any harder. And I don't mean getting off the line. They were sprinting into position before getting off the line. And I just was watching their organisation. I thought, Christ, they look too busy. They look like they're going to wear themselves out.
I was worried about that.
Did you think that?
Yeah, yeah. I was watching the game and thinking, those boys are working so hard. Because England did a lot. They had to defend a lot more than Ireland had to defend. Mm. They were working so hard. And I was expecting them. And someone like McIlvenor-Polo, who was sensational in the game, he played 75 minutes.
Yeah,
I was thinking they can't last. They just can't last at this intensity.
And they did, which suggests that for all the stick that we, as much as anyone, and lots of other people have given Eddie Jones's methods of conditioning, he has got his team in peak physical condition.
Where it is going to fall down, I'm afraid. This is where we need to be very cautious. And if I, as an England fan, I tell you now, I'd be worried.
Go on.
Well, we know the England game plan, right? This looked remarkably like the New Zealand game. Do you not think?
Yeah, that certainly the Definitely. First half an hour of the New Zealand game, England replicated that intensity, but for, yeah. I would say, 70 minutes. It wasn't quite perfect. They switched off towards the end of the first half and towards the end of the second half, but 70-plus minutes they achieved that.
It also reminded me a little bit of Australia, you know, when they went over there and they won three games, because it's that sort of, I mean, that sort of intensity, that work rate. And you kind of really understood why Haskell was so important to all that, because, you know, that's what he is, big ball carrier, work rate, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, not to revisit that. The problem is, Eddie Jones has one style. And when he has all his horses available to him, it's bloody brilliant. But if Manu isn't available, or Teo isn't available, I mean, he's
no,
all
no,
at
no.
sea.
If Manu and Teo aren't available.
Sorry, yes, Manu yeah. and Teo. Which, by the way, is not beyond the realms of possibility.
Is that not the same for most international
no.
sides?
No, it's not.
If your first and second choice aren't available, it's going to mean it might impact the way you play.
No.
Tell me a national... What? So that doesn't...
No.
That wouldn't affect
why,
Ireland.
Okay, this is why, okay? Because, again, same with Billy, same with all the carriers. There is a very specific way Jones wants to play. So if you think about, you know, so-called Warren Ball. Okay, Warren Ball has gone through all sorts of different variations of what this thing looks
yeah,
like.
I think it might go back to Warren Ball as well before long.
Well, depending on what they want to do, right? Eddie Jones has one way, and if he doesn't have all the players available to them, or if they're a bit jaded and they're not fit enough, or, you know, they're a bit banged up from a heavy season or something, this system falls down. So when it works, it's okay. amazing. And I think with all the England players available... in good condition, they could win a World Cup. But could they replicate that intensity for a whole World Cup? I'm not sure they can.
Well,
that's my problem.
I think you've just described what would be the case for any country.
No. Because countries adapt.
Do teams adapt?
So New Zealand, right? New Zealand play...
Don't take out New Zealand, because they've had the most settled squad, the most settled side, best performing.
Because
it's apples and oranges.
It's
like,
not.
Take the, another country. Take Ireland. What would Ireland do if they lost Sexton
fantastic.
And Carberry?
No.
That wouldn't affect them.
Because what I'm trying to say, Tim, is if Ireland missed a few guys and had to change their style, they could change their style. So we've seen Ireland play one way against the All Blacks, very much like...
What's their second way of playing?
Wait.
I've not seen it.
Okay. Which is very much like England did. And then if you look at, you know, other games that they've had in this... You know, in the Six Nations, where they batter teams, they can play a different way. Wales have multiple ways of playing. Lots of teams have multiple ways of playing. Eddie Jones has one very specific way of playing, and that kind of filters down through the way they train, the way they condition, why it's so intense,
great.
All these things.
Great. Well, now England have the player pool that means, of any nation on earth, if you lose one player, you should be able to find someone of reasonable enough quality. And I think that will be the case. It feels like you're just trying to...
You would have thought that, wouldn't
you? You're just trying to piss on England's chips
a little bit. No, I think it was one of the most impressive, most powerful displays of rugby I've seen in about 2 or 3 years.
But still, it's not enough. It's not good enough. You need to be able to do that and be world class at a different style.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, okay.
It's interesting because... The style is very different, I think, to how England were playing when they had the two pivots in with Ford and Farrell. Mm. So I think that style served its purpose for a period of time. I'd be interested to see if Eddie Jones goes back to it for tactical reasons, depending on the opposition.
Mm.
So that will be interesting. No, can I just say Byron McGuigan last week, if you didn't listen to last week's podcast of Byron McGuigan, basically, it's funny, funnily enough, he's an international rugby player. He knows his stuff. He said Henry Slade, the most talented player he's ever played with, and he just wants him to see it, do it on the international stage. He did it.
And he got to see that.
He talked about the massive importance of the speed of the breakdown at international level, and England had
that
and disrupted.
And yeah,
and Mark
it's the
Wilson
combination
and Tom Curry were so good. Wilson, like we knew how much we'd miss Billy Vunipola, but it's unthinkable when you think back a year that we would be saying, God, we'd really miss Mark Wilson if he wasn't there. And,
not if you...
And a 20, and also Byron McGuigan said, Tom Curry is absolutely immense.
Yeah.
And age just 20. And that guy, oh my God.
And he also said that Billy is one of a kind and possibly the best number 8 in the world. And I think all of those things were proven. Byron McGuigan knows his stuff.
Yes, he does. And just to add to the Tom Curry thing, I mean, what are they going to do when they've got Tom Curry and the War Hawk? Like ready to go.
I did say a few weeks back that I think
Underhill to Hooker?
I think Underhill won't make the World Cup because, one, I liked Curry, and two, he's a body wreck.
You
can't rely on him.
Tom
being
Curry
there for seven
does
games.
Get injured. You know, he's had a broken arm. He's had a few bits pieces of his shoulder, I think. Yeah, I just think the way that both Curry and Underhill play, and Willis, because when he's fit, he'll come back into reckoning, I'd guess. They're all just so massively physical that they're all going to get hurt at some point. So one of those three, they're all good enough to play, just whichever one is fit for the World Cup.
So I think an interesting thing from this, just talking about Wilson's performance in particular, I think there's a number of senior players who are not available at the moment through injury, who will really struggle to get back in this team.
Who are you thinking?
I'm thinking Hartley and Robshaw.
Yeah, agreed.
And Anthony Watson. And JJ as well.
I think.
I think all three of those, because I loved that performance of the back three. I think Daly, while not perfect on the high ball, was more secure. And I thought, for the reasons that they were picked, Noel and May, in very different ways.
Noel, so good. Because everyone was saying, oh, England have to start cocking a singer. We have to start cocking a singer. I wasn't subscribing to that.
I definitely wasn't subscribing to that.
Jack Noel showed.
And they were
and
so.
He did pack down on the flank.
He did.
As well.
He did. What a flanker.
But those two played so differently. But were both superb. Noel, his work rate was exceptional. The carrying, he was given free rein to come inside, work off 9, work off 10, and pick and go and carry. And he was really effective doing it. Mm. Whereas May was on the wing. I thought his defence and kind of positioning and solidity under the high ball was unlike I've ever seen with Johnny May. And his speed, both for his try and for the kick through for the Slade try, were superb. That was a hell of a performance by Johnny May. Mm. It's a good job he's got 6 foot long legs as well.
Exactly right. I can't wait for next week's game, because obviously France are going to Twickenham.
Correct, on the Sunday.
And they're enormous. And I'm not sure you can run through France in the same way.
Well, it's going to be a real test, because that game would have taken so much out of that England team.
I don't think it was England's...
Exactly. Yeah.
Sorry, Phil. It will have done. You're 100% right. I don't think it was actually England's sheer size that actually meant you're saying they're not going to be able to run
over
France.
It's not size, it's the intensity.
It was the speed of the breakdown. Again, just go back and watch each of England's tries. I watched the game a few times, and I've made that video on Facebook. You should have a look. But Tom Curry and Mark Wilson blew the crap out of the rucks. The ball was... I mean, Ben Young's had his best game for a while.
Yep.
Yep.
And despite the fact that I saw him getting the same rating as Conor Murray in loads of newspapers and stuff today, we'll get on to...
Let's not talk about coverage of the rugby. Let's please talk about coverage of the rugby, particularly the Welsh, the Wales-France game. Because,
oh, yeah.
Wow.
100%.
Wow.
Anyway, Curry and Wilson between them just made the ball on a platter so fast. And so I actually think it was the speed, not the size of England that...
Well, you've got to carry the ball.
That actually...
You know, you've got to carry the ball. You've got to get on the front foot, and getting on the front foot and, you know...
Yes, but if you have guys that are so effective at the breakdown...
60-40 rule, Tim.
Then
do you know the 60-40 rule?
What?
60% of winning the ruck back is all about the ball carrier. Only 40% for the supporting guys. That's how you should work it. So like you've got to get over the line. You've got to create a weak shoulder. You've got to work back, and then you guys can support you. And that again, this is my sort of problem here, which is France are a big team.
If
France are a big team. I think that would be another very good test.
You should do a version of Rudyard Kipling's poem, If.
Yes, I can do that.
If all these things happen, then France will beat England.
Exactly. Sport is all about ifs. That's my only concern.
If any of your predictions came true, then the whiteboard might have some credibility.
Oh, Tim. Tim.
Right.
No one...
Okay, I want to talk about this, because in the wake of the game, I did spend a bit of time on Twitter.
No,
oh,
you didn't.
No.
why did you
do it to yourself, Tim?
What I've learned is
you hate. Okay, I've got a question for you before we talk. Why do you hate all the Irish people?
I don't hate Irish people.
Why do you hate them though? If you were to,
what are you talking about?
Just you. Go on. Let's see. Okay, so these are tweets with England fans, yeah? Welsh fans?
No, we had a lot,
French fans.
We had a lot of wonderful, very magnanimous Irish fans getting in touch, and I think they are representative of the mass of people in general from that proud, wonderful island,
which you hate so much.
There are also some flat earth deniers that are Ireland rugby fans who think that physics is a conspiracy that's been socially constructed just to deny them winning rugby games.
Yeah.
Well, because they will not let it go and think that England shouldn't have had Henry Slade's first try because it was a forward pass to Johnny May.
Wasn't the forward pass.
They think that Maro Itoje should have got a red card, that Tom Curry should have got a red card. They think the Mako Vinopola's try definitely shouldn't have been a try, and they think Kean Healy, despite the fact he didn't actually ground the ball, there was no question that should have been a try. It's the level of cognitive dissonance, and it's just unbelievable after a game.
And interestingly, so one of the few times that I've heard the Irish actually wanting a hard border.
Hey.
On their own try line.
So can we just deal with those? But, Tom Curry shouldn't have got a yellow card.
No, I thought it was harsh.
Gar says described it as late with no arms or late with a shoulder. It was marginally
marginal.
Late. It was marginally late,
and it was slowed down. I just don't think that's a yellow card.
He completely he hit him very hard, but it was a full wrap. So yeah. I also agree, it's not a yellow card.
So lovely, lovely little bit of milking it from Keith Earl as he got the magic sponge. The forward pass to Johnny May, or it wasn't. It was just not
a forward pass. Let's not discuss
forward
it.
Pass, and it's physics. We're not going to discuss it.
Yeah,
doesn't matter.
Kean Healy didn't ground his try.
So I think
Mako Vinopola had his hand underneath.
So I think there was.
I actually think that the England try should not have been a try. The one which looked like it's held up.
So on I think Kean Healy, I think there's enough doubt to from the video that I've seen
to go agree, with the on-field decision.
To agree with the on-field decision.
I agree with that. And Mako Vinopola's try was ruled out, however. For the same reason you said about when you slow it down, that's just a try. That is a try for me.
Is this the one that went to the video ref?
Yeah.
That's a try.
I believe he scored it, but I couldn't prove it.
So the doubt was not because the ref gave it on the pitch. The ball was on the line. That wasn't what they were checking. It was whether it was a double movement. So he lands and he then kind of pushes off a second time.
Oh, I didn't realise that. So I had it on mute.
I'm actually okay with the... I'm okay with both those decisions. I think there is some inconsistency going to video ref for one but not the other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. So I would have been happy with them both being a try or both not being a try, but as it happened, Ireland got the rub of the green. They got their try, which probably wasn't, and in my opinion, that is, and England didn't get a try, which probably was, meaning that could have been an absolute beatdown. Another moment that's worthy of mention is Peter Omani before 6 p.m. on ITV. Couple of C-bombs.
You've not got this, have you?
I laughed my head. No, I'm not going to play the audio. I laughed my head off.
It was funny. It was so...
So I'm sure it's a term of endearment where he's...
Oh, yeah. It was to Sinks, wasn't it?
Yeah, good old Carl Sinclair.
So I do actually think this is a pretty good loss for the Irish. That's the other thing about this game. I think they needed to lose prior to the World Cup.
I think they'll learn from this.
Yeah, I do as well.
I think they'll learn massively, and I think they'll learn how they can counteract that style of rugby.
It's either going to be that, or there's going to be a seed of doubt in their head now, because I think we've all been in that team when we thought we were invincible, and then you get beat, and it feels like your world's ended.
Yeah.
And I bet it feels the same way.
Yeah. So yeah. just on
it, it'd feel like the way you do when you walk past your whiteboard.
No, the whiteboard is solid.
It's absent from the room, though, isn't it?
I use it as a spray table. No, the spray model airplanes.
there's one thing that I think was quite interesting about the way that England went about, not about the physicality or anything like that, is the way that they did try and disrupt, and it was almost Saracen-esque in some of the stuff. So they... Peter Omani dropping the C-bomb a couple of times is probably a good example of just how they managed to disrupt and frustrate some of the big key leaders, the senior players, because Sexton, Murray and Omani were all off their game. And there was a couple of times there was Manu throwing Sexton onto the floor.
I love that clip. It's so symbolic, isn't it?
Yeah, there's that. there's also Itoje holding Sexton into the ruck.
Because, I mean, it's very NFL-y, right? In fact, you know, it goes for most sports. But Sexton's not a big bloke. You know, and well, if you get your hands on him, you can really rough him up. And it doesn't matter if it's on the outside of the ruck, or it doesn't matter if you're running over him, or you're tackling him. If you can get to him, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. And that's exactly what England did do. And,
well, you can throw him like a ragdoll if you're Manu Tuilagi. You can tackle and rip the ball off him if you're Owen Farrell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two beautiful moments.
I mean, just think about how much bigger and stronger both Owen Farrell and Manu are than Johnny Sexton.
I wouldn't have said Owen Farrell's that much bigger.
Oh, I would.
Oh, no, maybe a stone heavier. Both about the same height.
No, I think Sexton's
taller.
Yeah, Sexton's 6'2", 6'1". But he's not big. He's not like that powerful build that Owen Farrell is. Owen Farrell's quite a powerful man. And, you know, they just get hold of him, they ragdoll him. But usually he's, you know, in NFL parlances, he's usually got a very clean pocket to work in. And that just wasn't the case.
Hmm. So, on Owen Farrell then, you've got to concede, despite saying that, you know, you wouldn't even have him in your squad and Sipper should be starting. Owen Farrell was world class in that game.
He was, absolutely he was. Yeah. Nothing inconsistent about what I said, though.
And he was a very calm leader, right?
Well, that's the kind of disparity that I wanted to flag up. The difference, people were looking at Owen Farrell as potentially being rattled, and it was actually probably Sexton who got a little bit rattled and frustrated.
I've always said the same thing about him, which is he needs an inside centre who can do a lot of heavy lifting, and he had that.
And he needs back row that can do the same.
Exactly.
And someone else around him who can take some of the load creatively off him, which again they used Henry Slade brilliantly for
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So I'll continue to say he's a great leader. He's a great player. I still don't think that he should be captain, although this is a massive feather in his cap. Nothing hasn't really changed anything that I think about Owen Farrell.
You're not talking about his tackling this week though.
Well, he made his tackles because in the same way that
he missed a few.
He missed three.
But the point is that the system. That's a system thing because Mark Wilson missed five, I think.
But he also
made 27.
Well, yes, okay. So you know, it's not. Yeah, you know, he's been making a huge amount of tackles.
Mark Wilson, which the rugby paper rated 6 out of 10, and a quote among the words they used to describe him, they used quiet.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure these people know their rugby that well.
27 tackles.
Yeah, no.
It's a quiet day.
I want to see him when he's really going for it.
Mark Wilson, frankly, is this generation's Richard Hill. I mean, he's unspectacular, yet he's absolutely spectacular. You know, if you understand what he's there to do. I mean, you've got to. I mean, if you're going to be a rugby journalist of any calibre, you have to acknowledge and admire what Mark Wilson does.
Yeah.
Simple.
Mark Wilson, so him and Mako, who both got 27 in this game, so that is the most tackles for anyone playing for England since 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the most tackles since 2012. And sorry, the word wasn't quiet. I'm reading the rugby paper review now. It says, was not as conspicuous as in the autumn, but gave it everything. It was a little bit like, give him a certificate for participation.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, he tried,
was absolutely,
tried hard.
Like, try saying, Mark Wilson, 8 out of 10, immense.
Yeah, Mark Wilson opposite British and Irish Lion Peter O'Mahony. Immense.
Lions captain Peter O'Mahony.
Immense. It's just immense. I mean, he outplayed his opposite number.
Yes.
Mark Wilson's one of the most annoying players to me by a country mile. Because, as I've been saying for quite some time, there are so many players that could make a difference to England if only they get a shot. It took a whole cavalcade of injuries to get Mark Wilson his chance at international rugby. And now he's there. He's awesome.
He is, yeah. I do think, so final bits now, we've probably talked about England Ireland long enough, but I do think Billy coming back was massive for the carrying. Because when you've got someone like Billy, you can have other guys like Itoje, like Mako, like Sinks, who can chip in and Tuilagi, who can chip in. But Billy is so important because he as we said before about Tuilagi, he just sucks in so many defenders.
And you know, that's exactly my point. With all the players, this system is brilliant. You remove Billy, you remove a hard carrying centre, they've got real issues. And that's my main problem.
But you're such a contradiction because you always say, like, no, a good coach picks the system based on the players he has.
Rather than says. But is this not just the perfect storm of having your system and all the players available for it? There's nothing contrary about that, is there?
Well, no, but then what? So what do you want? You want.
I've told you exactly what I want. If you just repeat what I said, you know, it's obvious. So
you want him to have every a backup different, plan. Every different he system needs to have, for every different possibility.
Yes. So, he needs to have a backup plan.
So that, like, for example, as Phil pointed out, the
backup plan.
We don't need to go into this again. But like as Phil pointed out, the first 2 years he was in charge, where he played a totally different system.
He didn't play to great effect. He did not play a completely different system. It was actually very, very similar.
Two fly halves.
Well, he's still, you know, he's still got two distributors. It doesn't matter if your distributor is at 10, sorry, 12, 15, or 15 or 13. You've still got two distributors there. It's not a world away, is it?
Okay.
England, Wales, France.
Wales, France. Where to start?
What a way to get this. A load of people say before France play, I wonder which France is going to turn up. Well, both of them did.
They really did, because in that first half, in dreadful conditions, the French team, their halfbacks in particular, other than their kicking at sticks, but they were so composed, they had so much time on the ball, their decision-making was excellent, they controlled the game brilliantly. Completely different to Wales, who just couldn't help but knock on everything.
Wales were garbage.
That first half, they were awful. They did nothing.
I can't see Anscombe playing 10 again. There's people on Twitter. Hang on, I'll do that for myself. who were saying, you know, the 10 for Wales next week will have to be Anscombe again. And I just think, not a hope. I mean, there are things not in his favour. It was wet. I think he's much better in the drive.
Oh my God, I can't stand people saying this.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It happens all the time. People say, like,
it's wet, yeah.
He grew up in New Zealand. What do I think it's a desert? Jesus.
He grew up in the Gobi Desert. and he's hydrophobic.
He grew up in New Zealand, and also France demonstrated in the first half.
Yeah.
That rain...
I'm with you.
...is completely irrelevant. Wind and rain, I can understand extreme conditions can be bad, but a bit of rain shouldn't affect your core skills of top international players. So that is just rubbish excuse.
I think we pretty rapidly found out he's not a top international player.
Well,
although the rain definitely stopped him running that extra half inch to tackle Louis Picamole. Didn't even try... He didn't even try. And as Louis Picamole dived in, I was thinking, do you know who would try and make that tackle?
Bigger.
He might wipe himself out in the process of doing it, but he would definitely try.
Bigger would put his body on the line. Not over chase and then stop and watch him go.
Yeah, and then apologise to your mates.
Sorry, guys.
My bad.
He just stepped me. It's too vicious, his Picamole's step.
And then I can only assume Anscombe is working with a sports psychologist.
Can you ever remember not like trying to make it look like you were trying, but not actually trying to tackle someone.
Oh yeah, a few times.
Phil, you must have come up against some big championship wingers.
Yeah.
But Phil's got a reputation for being a good tackler.
Yeah, I never ever shied out of a tackle. That's why I was injured so much.
Yeah, I've shied out of many. many. And not because I didn't want to make the hit, just because maybe I was a bit tired. That's the other one. Yeah, Anscombe, right, I'm certain is working with a sports psychologist. Do you know the guy who writes on pen, effort, back it, BY?
So George Ford had that on the back of his hand again.
Oh, I thought Ben Youngs had it.
No.
No, Fordy did.
It was George Ford. He had effort, BY, Ben, effort, Ben Youngs, or back yourself. He had that on his hand again.
Screw Ben Youngs. well, I'm sure that Anscombe must be working with someone, right, because... They've obviously whispered into his ear, hey, if it's nearly in your distance, you take it, you back yourself. And the first two kicks he took just fell pathetically short of the posts. Then he slices one after he misses the tackle on Louis Picamole's. I can't see this going much further with Anscombe at 10. That's what I'm saying.
If you had Lee Halfpenny in your 15, though, would that make a difference? I mean, that would make a difference to the kicking.
Oh, yeah, of course it
kicking,
would.
Kicking, yes.
Of course that would make a difference to the kicking, but with the fact you had someone who could kick, would you then, just on the balance of play... take goal kicking out of the equation, would you then want Ains to come over?
No, I wouldn't, because I just think Bigger's world class. I mean, I think Bigger is very similar to Farrell. And, you know, he can just, he's just a much more all-rounded player. Yeah. I think in those first, in those opening exchanges, when the Welsh ball carriers are getting smashed and they're knocking it on, Biggar will settle down the game, kick it wherever he needs to, go and, you know, go and chase the ball, that kind of thing. Anscombe has like one setting, which is let's challenge the line. He didn't even do it very successfully.
But I think this is evidence of the fact that Gatland is realising where his true strengths lie within his squad, trying to get the ball to Liam Williams, Davis, and George North, trying to get these guys the ball. I think that's what the Anscombe thought is.
Well, Anscombe is a good player coming off the bench. Because, you know, if you're chasing a game, maybe not this game because, you know, the opposite happened. But if you're chasing a game, and think about England-Wales last year, they brought Anscombe on. It was bloody brilliant because he can challenge the line.
As a Brokenfield runner as well.
I understand but Gatland is clearly trying to evolve that to being the model of how Wales play.
Yeah, well, he's also got Pratchell to come back, and I think Pratchell's probably more talented than both of them combined. So he'll be looking at him as well. There are other options for Wales. I just don't think Anscombe's it. Let's talk about France because they're more interesting.
Yeah, France couldn't have been more French if they were a baguette in a yellow gilet on strike,
crushing Paris.
Yeah, on strike, causing civil unrest.
Yeah, they were
peak France.
They
peak
were
French.
So good. Like the first 15, maybe the first 10. Awini Antonio, every time he got his hands on the ball, would make yards. Wilhelm, whatever his name is, he was an absolute monster.
I did love Eddie Butler pronouncing. I love it when he pronounces naturalised French players in a French accent.
Oh, no. There's one better.
Like, because it was, what is it, Christian? Not Christian, is it? What's his first name? But he's a Namibian born, South African raised.
Wilhelmse.
well, how about Thomas Castagnède? Everybody knows as Thomas Castagnède. He said, Thomas, what is going down by the side? Yes, he's French, but his name is Thomas. It's clearly and obviously Thomas. That's fine. I think France are going to come back from this. I think they're going to be a bloody strong team.
So I think you're right in that. I think, so when I was looking at this French team, and they have got, this is before the game, they've got bags of talent. They've got an enormous pack. They've got leaders all over the field. But this team, as it was written, has hardly played together.
No.
And like game time for key combinations and key positions and decision makers isn't there. So you knew they were going to come unstuck. Watching that first half, I thought, oh, ignore everything that I've just said because they've just clicked. They've got it. Even in this terrible conditions against a very good Wales team, JB Cup holders. I thought, ignore that kind of Ben Darwin theory of contractual stability and playing together means you're a better team, because this French team has just proved it wrong.
Do you reckon Ben's got the most influential theories of any man with the surname Darwin?
It's up there.
It's up there, isn't it?
Definitely
it's
up there.
It's one or two.
Top two. And then, so first half, I was ripping up kind of what I thought based on what Ben Darwin tells me to think. thinking that I'd got this completely wrong, only to be proven completely right. Like, almost too right, that theory, in the second half. Because that French performance was like, they've never played together. It's like at times, they'd never even played rugby.
The thing which just broke my heart, right, was the Varmahina 20-yard pass. He was so good. And he's a bloody brilliant player. And, you know, lots of what France were doing was going well. The lineout was okay. They were disrupting Wales. You know, they had big carriers. Lombi from Lyon comes on, starts wrecking people.
Yeah.
Bamba comes on. You know, their props can carry.
By the way, he's going to have to... earlier in the year, I did do a great name rugby player 15, and Demba Bemba gets in.
Yeah.
Demba Bemba is in.
He's amazing.
But
Vahamina, what are you good at? You're over 20 stone, you're 6'7", you can carry. What are you good at? Do that.
Yeah.
Carry, just run straight. Don't try and throw in...
Particularly run straight after you're the recipient of the second awful
bad
pass.
Yeah.
How can I compound this terrible pass?
Yeah. It's the multiplier effect.
When has he actually done this successfully? That would be my question. And he was captain at the time.
Oh,
he was the captain.
It was such a bad decision. And it was brilliantly read by George North.
Yeah, because
George North
was terrible.
He finished those two tries brilliantly.
He got man of the match.
I know that is outrageous because he didn't do anything else.
Well, for the Uge try, yeah, it was completely him. There was no one else to blame for the Uge try.
Uge?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, I don't know.
It's a one-person error that yeah, North slid in. And again, he finished it brilliantly.
Yeah. I mean, I would also say, on the balance of things, maybe Wales did deserve to win. Because I was very upset. And I was thinking...
so upset that your country, the team that you support, won.
Yeah. I thought, oh, Wales are lucky. They've got an interception try. They've got the Uge mess up. But then I thought, no.
Uge, excellent at saluting after he scores a try. Not so good catching a rugby ball.
Do you know what I love most about Uge? I mean, maybe the most. It's just how much he winds people up.
Yeah.
How much
yeah,
people hate him. And yeah, it just makes me love him even more. I'm but like, go on, stamp on someone. Stamp on someone's head.
I love that. That makes me love Owen Farrell as an England yeah, fan. I love Owen Farrell so much because I love how much the other nations...
And Mike Brown just, as an
And Mike England Brown fan as well, yeah.
Yeah, totally. But they can't hold a candle next to Uge.
No, true.
But I mean, he's so slippery as well.
Well, the slipperiness of Uge, it paid off perfectly for his try as he slid into the corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he was obviously extra greasy for this game.
Oh, so greasy. In the rain!
His paws, combined with that torrential downpour, the grease yeah, exuding from his paws.
I mean, I've said it before, but if you could literally scrape the grease off Uge, it would make a car engine run 40% more efficiently.
Oh, absolutely.
That's how slippery he is.
You talk about like they picked George North as man of the match, and he scored a couple of tries. Fine, great, good for a fantasy. I wouldn't have picked him as man of the match. But basically, there was another moment where the same people that were picking him as the man of the match, the commentary team, also said, I think it might have been Jiffy actually. Oh, you can hear the Welsh crowd singing, and it was. Oh, for God's sake. I've got the wrong clip.
Don't worry about
anyway,
it.
It doesn't matter.
Don't worry about it, because yeah, if you were in Wales, you'd have been treated to the BBC Wales, France pre-game show.
Oh, no, I'll just say what
before, oh, please, before, please
so,
do.
So Jiffy said, oh, you can hear the Welsh fans singing now, and it was the French crowd singing the Marseillaise. Like, are you sure
fair?
Sure they're Welsh?
Yeah. It's not really fair, because I guess as a commentator there could be a group of Welsh fans beneath
course,
you.
Everyone can get some of the stuff wrong.
But you can't get this wrong, right? Which was the Wales versus France pregame. One of the worst conceived shows ever to hit TV.
That's a big statement.
Oh no, this was terrible. Okay, so the panel is star-studded. Okay, so Gabby Logan is presenting it with someone else who I can't remember. Sam Warburton's on there.
Sounds great so far.
Rachel Taylor, who
sounds brilliant,
also coaches Colwyn Bay, my first ever club, and you know, I think record cap holder for Wales. Do you know who they had on as the French expert for rugby? Oh, and a comedian of some sort. Who is the French expert? Who do they rope in?
Castagnard.
Oh, Castagnard, no.
Rafael Ibanez.
Oh, no. Come on, really think rugby.
Philippe Salas, Philippe Saint-André.
Betson.
More rugby. The most rugby-ish French guy you can think. A legend of French rugby.
Scholli, Bernard Scholli.
that would have been
so
that would have been amazing.
French chef Michel Roux.
The Englishman
who presents to be a French chef, Michel Roux, was there to tell us about the French team.
You're joking.
No, this is deadly serious.
He is a rugby fan. He likes his rugby. He likes Quins.
Well, good for him. fantastic. So I was watching this show and I thought, this is garbage. So it was kind of, I think they wanted to have like some sort of panel show quiz, you know, jolly, you know, non-serious thing. And then they panned over to a feature that they made. And I can't tell you who this woman is, but there's some woman who did a feature about the French team, and they told me absolutely nothing about France. It was like rehashed rubbish jokes about, oh, they like to eat onions. Oh, and they like garlic. Not a single bit of rugby analysis. And when they come back to the studio, they had to tell us facts about the game, like, oh, did you know that it used to be 4 points for a try. Yeah, I know all that, but you're about to play France versus Wales.
That's completely irrelevant to this game that's happening right now, the biggest game in world rugby right now.
This is what happens when you have no competition. right? And all the money in the world. You make absolute dross. And, you know, I couldn't be more... If you watched rugby for the first time ever and you think, hey, what is this? It's just, it was awful. It was awful.
Who do you think did the best coverage of the weekend?
Oh, ITV, probably.
Well, yeah, I thought... I enjoyed the Scotland Italy game.
Yeah.
So I really like Paul O'Connell.
Yeah.
I love him being in comms.
He's great.
I think as a pundit, because he's quite kind of he contemplates exactly what he's going to say every time. He's very purposeful in what he says.
Very purposeful and very gentle.
Very slow. Yeah, very slow and gentle. It means he's not as good a pundit where you've only got say 10 or 20 seconds to make a statement. But when you've got a longer period of time of listening to him in comms in the game, he's brilliant.
Yeah, Paul O'Connell's great. Love John Barkley.
Yeah,
yeah, but you love John Barkley like I love AJ McGinty. Yeah, it's not really fair. Who scored a hat trick this week?
It's a slight man crush on John Barkley. Yeah, but I love ITV.
I love listening to any game commentated on by Nick Mullins.
He used one phrase which I still haven't quite worked it out, but I love it. What was it? Percussive defence by England.
Look, it's not quite as good as charismatic megafauna.
No, it's not.
But it's good. It's good, Nick.
And
well
it's not. And it's not quite a rolling ball of barbed wire to describe Sinotti. Sinotti.
If he still does listen, I'm not sure he does. But if he still does listen, if you could describe,
he listens on a Tuesday.
Oh, does he? Well, yeah. If you could describe a pack at one point as look at the size of those men, those charismatic megafauna, I would be delighted. By the way, it's not a phrase that I've come up with. I think the hunter, Cameron Haynes, came up with that.
A megafauna is just a word to describe animals.
Animals, yeah. Big animals.
So in terms of the coverage, I did find some of the artsy shots of the raindrops falling from the French TV production crew.
The spider cam shot of the raindrops. Oh, it was so good.
Oh, I've got one hell of a story about how I watched the game on Friday. I was with friend of the pod, Bryn Williams.
Yes,
and that's all I'm going to say. So this is a shot. This is. I'm sorry. I know Tim doesn't like it. Let me do this. This is a shot straight across his bow. This is a shot. This is a story I'm going to have to tell you off air because ooh. I know he'll get very upset. But Bryn Williams, be warned.
But then you shouldn't have mentioned anything.
I know. It's terrible broadcasting. It's narrow casting to one person.
Particularly as we can't say on this particular occasion what come up and ask us at the bar at the
tier two tour.
Because Phil. I mean, for a man so adept at spreadsheets and planning, I can't believe you didn't plan the pregnancy.
Yeah.
Tell the firstborn a little bit more thoroughly.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
The flip side is, unless you thought if you were trying to get your paternity leave during the Six Nations, that's actually quite a smart...
Yeah, let's just say that happened, Tim.
one last one for you about French TV coverage and why I love it. Every time there was a questionable decision by a French player, never made the big screen.
There was no replays. No. Zero replays. The pick-em-alls hit on Liam Williams, not zero replays until Liam Williams is already in an ambulance.
I thought that was a potential red card.
So
which one was this?
The pick-em-alls hit on Liam Williams.
Oh, okay.
In real time, I thought, ooh. Of course, we couldn't watch it, so we had to actually rewind the skybox to that exact hit. But I do like the fact
I rewound my BT box.
Did you? I do like the idea that the broadcaster can be supportive of one nation.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, I would do it. I'd do it every day of the week.
Your nation would be France in that game.
that is true.
I think it's an interesting one. I think that one is probably... I don't think that... Pickemalls was reckless at all. I think it was that's probably one of the best examples of a rugby incident.
I totally agree.
And lastly, before we leave this, what do you think of the two second generation French players that were on display, Pinaud and Ntamack?
So I would have liked to see more, and I think had it been better conditions, which we might get this weekend or later in the tournament, I think we would have seen more. Pinaud, I actually think the two try-scoring wingers got more of the plaudits, but the two non-try-scoring wingers in Josh Adams and Pinaud looked the two most dangerous. They just hardly ever got ball in hand.
Yeah, Josh Adams was really good, actually.
He was really dangerous for the Davies try. No, Thomas Williams try.
He was, but that he should have been tackled. I mean, fair play. It's like every single one of Wales's tries shouldn't. I mean, just it was self destruct from France.
It was complete self destruct. None of those tries should have been scored. Just one other thing from the French Wales game. The defence of the French forwards. So I'm just looking down the stats of the Welsh pack in terms of metres made with ball in hand. And it reads 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 7, 17. And then the bench is 0, 0, 1, 1, 0.
Wow.
So this is what the French pack did to England last year, was just completely nullified any of the forwards getting over the game line. So in terms of what JB was saying today about the England's potential weakness is if the French pack can stop them, stop Billy and stop Mako and stop Sinks and stop Cruis, stop all of them, England will be in for a tough game. Now that is a massive if.
And I think what you've just talked about there is exactly the point, which is when all these guys are out on the field, Billy's there, but that might attract a couple of defenders. Well, then there's space for Mako or for Kyle Sinclair, or for Maro Itoje. Well, not Maro Itoje.
Maybe not Maro Itoje.
He's going to be out. But
that's a big loss.
But there's other guys who it creates space for. And then if you need to get a bit of go forward elsewhere, Manu Tuilagi's out there.
Yeah.
So you're playing in Twickenham, which is kind of a big advantage. It's a big deal for France England. That
it is definitely.
I'm not sure you need to fear France that much, but you know,
if I was grading Wales, I would say
degrading them.
I would see C or a C-.
I think you've been generous.
Yeah, they didn't win this game as much as France lost it.
No, totally.
Also, Warren Gatland, a man who I have unlimited respect for, said Wales have forgotten how to lose. This will not age well.
Yes.
Will not age well one bit, because they are going to lose.
They can't hold the JB Cup forever.
No, they are going to lose. And
although that is a huge motivation for them.
Oh, well, that's the only thing they're talking about at the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, the only thing. I mean, I can't see them turning over. England and Cardiff.
Yeah.
That's possible.
And it's Ireland in Cardiff as well.
Final game of this. Yeah, they could be JB Cup holders right until the final game.
That is interesting, isn't it? Scotland away will be hard for him.
Mm.
I mean, look, the whole Six Nations is hard because the quality of all the teams now.
Well, no, you're lying there.
Go on.
The quality of five of the teams.
But even Italy are better.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are better. They definitely are better. They're not.
Well, it's all relative.
Yeah.
So Italy are better than they were when they started.
They're better than they were when Mauro Bergamasco was playing scrum half.
Yes. They have definitely improved, and they're definitely improving under Conor O'Shea. It's just every other team is also improving.
Yeah, the quality, I can't remember ever the quality of the other five being so high.
Yes.
That's the point.
It does seem like they are all timing it about right for the World Cup as well.
France looks super dangerous for the World Cup.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
If you were Sergio Parise, I would stick around until I broke Richie McCaw's world record.
Well,
just,
I mean,
purely for selfish vanity.
Well, how many caps has he got, and when's he retiring?
He hasn't announced when he's retiring, but you would imagine that.
And how old is he?
He's 36. I want to say.
35 not 36. He can't be 36.
35 or 36.
And I would imagine...
We're very different body shapes considering we're the same age.
You would think you would think that he's going to...
35. He's 36 just before the World Cup.
You would imagine that he would be expected to announce his retirement post-World Cup. But if he plays every game for Italy between now and then, I think he'll be maybe two caps short.
One or two behind.
And he can also, if he plays every game for Italy and they make a World Cup run, he could potentially, by the final...
he could win the World Cup and break the record.
Yeah, on the same day.
On the same day.
That's bloody impressive, isn't it?
You get some good odds on that.
Hang on. Is it quarter? They could quarterfinal, semi-final, final, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's seven games to win a World Cup.
Right, so he can do it.
If Sergio Parisse won the World Cup and broke McCaw's record in the same game.
What a game.
I think that's probably his retirement.
Pretty much.
It's the way he would have wanted to go out.
presumably they're going to have some warm-ups though, right? So they'll count.
It depends if they're cap games.
It should be cap games. Most warm-ups
are. I think it has been worked out that if he plays every game for Italy between now and...
Oh, has it? Right.
Yeah, he'll be one or two behind.
Short. So, anyway... But there's not a lot to cheer from Italy's point of view.
They got pumped. Yeah.
Well, so I think Scotland will be disappointed that, particularly in that first half, they didn't score more tries because they had territory in possession. And Italy, other than obviously the tries they scored, they disrupted them quite well at times. So there's some kind of positives to take from Italy there. But the fact that it was only really in the last 10 minutes when the game was completely over that Italy's attack did anything of note, anything at all.
Just thinking about it. You are right there. They do, more than anyone, need a little bit more time together. They've got a winger who plays for Treviso, who I absolutely love.
Esposito?
No, that's your favourite Justin Bieber song.
It is, isn't it? But I think he's a really good player.
Esposito, he scored the last try.
He did, yeah. He always wears a scrum hat. Absolute nightmare to stop.
And Campagnaro
played, a bit of a nightmare.
He did play very well on the wing when they got ball in hand for him.
Yeah, they just need a bit more time together. I don't think they get the same sort of preparation time as, say, the other camps. They're certainly not in the Algarve doing stuff. Well, they're not, are they? Let's be honest. They don't get the same preparation as Wales or England.
In terms of preparation and squad togetherness, they're in a better position than they have ever been. But they're still not, hang on.
They're nowhere near as well looked after as...
Yeah, but they never have been. I'm just saying relative.
Yeah, but you know, if you want them to be competitive, they've got to have...
Yeah, similar things to Ireland, England,
and Wales. The honest answer is I have no idea how well they're looked after. I know because I see a lot of on social media from England in particular, less so from Ireland, but I know. But I've not seen anything from the Conor O'Shea camp.
Take it from me, they're not.
From Dean Budd.
Yeah.
Well, so my point is that t'was ever thus. And I'm just talking about if we want to see an improving trajectory, you can't use that as a metric because Italy, with the fact that they're keeping more and more of their players in Italy in one of two regions.
And one of the regions is now owned by the Irish Union, which is Irish Union. That'd be weird.
That would be weird.
What are they doing? The Italian Union.
So relative, they're in a better position than they have ever been. Doesn't mean it's
It needs to be a professional setup on par, and that's one of the things actually you can do. So if you don't have the natural talent pool of Ireland or England or Wales, which they don't. What you can do is you can make the setup more professional. And all I'm saying is, of all the teams, they are the ones which would benefit the most from that kind of setup. That's it. That's all I'm saying.
Speaking of professional setups, do you know where Wales are spending this week?
Poland.
At that hotel, the thingy hotel where they do club call.
Rendezvous Hotel in Wakefield.
Yeah. There.
the Wakefield training camp. They are in Nice.
Oh, Nice. Nice.
Very Nice.
Very Nice.
They're going from probably a similar trip to us because they played in Paris this weekend just gone.
They're going to get hammered tonight. They probably did.
They're playing in Rome next weekend. So it appears, just from seeing... It was a load of the players were having coffee with the boys on the seafront in Nice today.
Lovely.
Lovely. We've had coffee with the boys on the seafront in Nice, haven't
we?
Beautiful. Just before they got the cab over to the World Rugby Awards.
That's exactly what happened.
Beautiful.
I would avoid Marseille like the plague.
Montpellier.
Marseille. I'm just saying, in general.
Sorry.
I mean, there's actually quite a good chance you would actually contract the plague if you went to
Marseille.
So literally avoid it like the plague. and then off to Rome. So that's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool week.
Yeah. That'd be an interesting week of training for him.
Yeah.
Blair Kinghorn, the greatest. He'd be in a great name 15 as well. Would Blair Kinghorn.
Very definitely be in the best name 15.
I think it's also worth pointing out the quality. Well, is it? I don't know. So, as I said, the quality of the Stuart Hogg try when he danced around everyone. But then it's easy to say quality if maybe you're not playing England or Ireland or France.
But you can also talk about the quality of the out the hand, out the back of the hand from Hogg as well.
It's immense. Yeah. He was very, very good. I guess we can leave it at that.
Scotland showed some serious attacking talents in this game.
They have serious attacking talents.
In fact, right. So to round that off, I'm going to suggest very quickly a team of the weekend. Shoot from the hip. So Mako Vinopola's got to be our number one.
Okay, who is not being picked from the England pack?
That's a good question. It's a good question actually, because
so
I can't think of anyone.
So. Of note has to be CJ Sander, who played 62 minutes with a broken cheekbone.
Good God.
He didn't outplay Billy Vunipola.
Now, I would love...
Not surprised in those
I'd love to know this, right? When you get a broken cheekbone in the professionals...
Fractured eye socket and broken cheekbone, I would say.
When that happens, do they put painkillers in you straight away?
Don't know.
Because that's a hell of an ask. I mean, I've had a very badly bruised jaw, which I thought was broken. And literally, right?
I stubbed my toe once. Got it really.
Oh no! I felt someone basically headbutted me, like right where on the jaw.
Whoa.
Oh my God! And in my adult life, I've never experienced this. I took myself to the changing rooms. I couldn't quite settle myself down, so I went to the toilet, and a tear rolled down my cheek because it hurt so much. And then I got in the car, I had to drive home, and it was the most intense pain I've ever had.
I'm trying to think of the most painful injury.
Oh, it was awful.
I think it was remember this was Colts, it was against Reading, and they had this enormous prop. And anyway, I ended up in a splits position with this prop on me. So I was like, my legs were in the splits and my chest was on the floor because...
And you were filming this, were you?
Because the weight of the prop was on my back.
Oh.
That was incredible pain. But no, the only other one is when I actually did my... I did my medial ligament by being punched on the knee. So I did a switch, got the ball, and the guy just sort of dived and went to tackle. He was just this massive fella, and he punched my leg like in a tap tackle motion but with a fist just to the joint
just
of my knee,
just hit right in the wrong spot.
Ping.
So I had another painful one. It's same jaw actually. In fact I still suffer from this today, and it's the first and last time that I got into a proper fight first and last time that I attempted to attack someone, right? So it was under 16s rugby, and I was thinking about this the other day because there's no way on earth, right, that this would be allowed to go on now. It was at least under 16s. We might have been young. It might have been under 15s, right? And just give you some background. Colwyn Bay Colts went... Oh, I've got so many stories about this now, right? Okay, there's so many things I need to say about it.
I've heard so many... I went to university with Rob Higgett, who played at Bristol and Worcester.
Yeah,
from
Ruthin, originally, North Wales.
Ruthin, originally. And the stories he tells about the big derby days in North Walian Colts rugby.
Oh, amazing.
He talks about with such romance.
Oh, because, of course, they beat the Scarlets.
They beat the Scarlets.
Yeah, yeah, everyone still talks about that. They beat the Scarlets. Dwayne Peel was in the team, blah, blah, blah,
they
blah.
They still talk about the Ruthin side that beat the Scarlets.
Yep, they absolutely
or
do.
Or Lynethley, as it was.
What was I saying? Yeah, so this tour, under-15s tour to Bridlington, right? This is how it started. I went around and got £10 off each player, which was a phenomenal amount of money, you know, as a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
A phenomenal. So £10 off.
To invest in pensions and...
Exactly what I did. Then my mum drove me to Cash and Carry so I could get crates of Heineken. right, in bottles.
Premium strong lager.
Yeah, and I remember unloading these crates in front of the coaches and the other parents, and like, rugby tour. That could just never happen now, could it? I mean, can you imagine there'd be people, I mean, someone was posting on Twitter about, you know, how the game's not inclusive enough. And do you know what the problem is with the game now? Parents are too much involved. Like, we had one coach who was slightly homophobic and had no idea about rugby, and it worked absolutely fine, right? Everything was gay this, gay, that's gay, right? It worked fine, it worked absolutely fine. Now, you know, he'd probably be put up against the wall and shot by firing squad.
At least.
Yeah. So anyway, back to what I was doing. So we were playing in Bridlington. And I went to actually attack a player. Like, literally, I went to throw a punch. First time I've ever done this. Thought, this is what happens on rugby tour. You know, rugby players should be hitting each other. So I jumped up. I cocked my fist. I'm about to clock this guy. And as I did, well-deserved, a Bridlington player saw me do it and punched me in the face first. So I fell to the ground with what I can only assume was a dislocated jaw or something. I could not eat for about 3 weeks.
Oof.
It was horrible. Horrible. And I deserved every moment of it. And from that point on, I've never punched anyone or even tried to punch someone in a rugby game since.
My worst... So back to where we... Back to the first tangent, worst pain from a rugby injury was also my medial collateral ligament, which is what Marrow has allegedly done, playing away at Preston Grasshoppers.
Local derby.
And someone tackled me high and I was kind of wrestling and someone went in low, you know, like a rugby league style torpedo tackle, and just the weight of me and someone else up high, my knee went in like that, and the whole of my body folded, and it was just, there was this loud pop, and I just started screaming.
Yeah.
It was horrible, 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 horrible pain.
Yeah.
Marrow's isn't that serious, though, we don't think.
I don't think, so mine was a proper full grade 3 pop tear.
Gone.
Yes, yeah. Nothing left.
I've remarkably never had a serious injury playing rugby. Not one.
It's all those tackles you've avoided.
It is. Touch wood. I've played every week for God knows how long. I've had a slight ankle problem, a slight shoulder problem.
No, I was going to say I've never had, because I haven't played a game in years. But I never had a serious injury. Concussions. Like now, if I was playing now, I would have been probably told aged 19... You got to stop for a year. I had so many.
They would probably make you see a counsellor.
Yeah, I had so many concussions in going through, like, whatever age it is when you go through the Southwest and the trials and the so sick form basically, upper sick.
Did you do?
Yeah,
18. Did you do kids rugby today, Tim?
No, it was called off because it was a bit cold.
Oh, bless. Now, this is a serious point. People talk about parents all the time, like parental involvement, how can we improve things. But I actually think we need to remove parents from basically all kids' rugby. You need one facilitator there with a bag of balls and that's it. That's what I've decided now. Parents are ruining rugby for kids.
Well, I don't care if you're a parent or not a parent because it requires volunteers and where you get them from, you can't be picky. What I do think, genuinely, is that coaches need to be coached. That's actually how you.
Why?
Because the level of coaching. I'm not talking about the mini rugby that is at my club. I'm not singling anyone out here. It's just what I see, that the quality of coaching is really not very good.
Yeah, but I actually don't even think people need coaching now until they get. I mean, look, if you go into a top private school, right?
Well, exactly.
I get it. Right.
Look at Ireland. Their whole success is through private schools.
Yeah.
The international success that Ireland have had has come from public schools.
But can I tell you what the private schools
coaches.
Can I tell you what private schools aren't doing? They're not doing this nonsense coaching where it's like, why don't we just let the kids invent their own game own rules?
No, I get that. But if you're getting to the age of 11, 12 and you haven't properly been taught how to tackle. Or
you need to learn.
You're never, ever going to make a top level rugby player.
Yeah, you need to learn your basic fundamentals. You need to learn how to ruck and so on and so forth. But now what they're doing, you know, if you look at all the... all the literature and stuff, it's like just nonsense games, and not keeping score, and let's try and make it enjoyable for the masses. Here's another thing. The masses don't need to play rugby. Only a select few people who want to be involved need to play rugby. If you don't want to be there...
No,
yes,
no.
Absolutely.
I don't want the NFL model where...
Someone told me the other day,
I'm not with that.
No. Wait. Someone told me the other day that their brother quit rugby because they were winning by too many points. To which I think maybe he just shouldn't play then. You know, if you don't want to be there, don't be there. Full stop. If you've not walked yourself there,
it's like the rugby equivalent of if you can't take me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best.
Yeah, exactly. We were winning by too much. It was too easy. Oh, that's right. That's the other thing which winds me up. Now I'm on this. Mixing teams at youth team level is unacceptable. So they mix the teams. If like you don't have enough players, the opposition will give you a few players. I think that's complete nonsense. You want to lose with your mates or win with your mates, but basically you just want to spend time with your mates. Do you want to spend some time with some guys from New Brighton? Anyway,
so back. So that's
nothing wrong with New Brighton, by the way. I have a lot of respect for that club.
So let's go back to what we were originally discussing.
What were we talking
which
about?
Which was, would anyone from any other team was there a single
in the pack
a single forward who would get into that England pack who stood out from an amazing performance? I think it's difficult because you couldn't have them both in the same teams. But Picamoles was very good.
He was very good.
Yeah, but yeah, I think everyone who played in the France-Wales game basically rules themselves out of selection.
Yeah, you're probably right in
Billy
that.
Billy Vanapola was good, but was he that good that he would oust Louis Picamoles from the weekend?
Yeah.
I think Wilson and Curry were absolutely outstanding. Vanapola looked great for a man who's just back.
Billy Vanapola is very much like Jupiter, the planet.
Huge gravitational pull.
Correct. Okay, Jupiter just being there allows all the other planets to exist because they don't get smashed by meteors, and that's what he does. You know, like even when he's not doing stuff, he's doing stuff, and you don't even realize it. You know, he's a focal point. The opposition are worried about him psychologically. It makes a difference. He's got to play.
Well, you two could probably outvote me. I'd go for Louis at number eight.
I'd probably keep Billy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Although Pickles would be very, very close.
I'd like
to fit them both into the team.
He's one of my favourite players, Louis Picamoles.
Well, there's got to be a second row that could get in.
Possibly James Ryan.
Yeah, possibly.
He was very, very good.
He was good enough, though, was he? He didn't, he didn't get the better of either Atoji or Cruis.
If you put him in the rest of the, if you switched jerseys with one of them, he'd look.
Which one? Cocker's Law. Who's got to go?
No, as in if you swap Ryan and Cruz around, for example, you're gonna, number fives, then we'd be saying, oh, Ryan's was the best.
Yeah. I think that's fair. You could swap Ryan for Cruz.
I think you're making up excuses now to get Irish players in the pack, personally. I'm keeping Cruz.
Would anyone get in the front row?
Probably not.
No, and that's the most surprising one, isn't it?
So amazing, that.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Like Mako.
Because Keen Healy and Ty Furlong are the form props in the world.
Yep. Although Keane Healy was a distant second to Mako, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Distant
yeah,
second.
Yeah, going into this game.
Keane Healy. Tadburn, you know. Yeah, maybe.
Furlong.
What did I say?
Burn.
Yeah, he didn't play, did he? No. Furlong, yes. Maybe. But Singler did very well. And also, Singler's got a bit of an attitude about him, a nasty edge.
Yeah, love it.
Which I've never really warmed to in the past. I think he's a bit of a liability.
So are we saying we'd pick... Are we just being, like, well...
One-eyed Englishman.
Totally one-eyed Englishman to say that we'd pick the whole England pack.
I'd pick the whole England pack.
I've got no skin
in the game.
That was such a good performance against the best pack in the world. Mm. Against... If you're picking the pack of last year, it would be mostly Irishmen.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll go along with that. And then scrum half them.
Laidlaw.
I could go with that.
Yeah, he was very good.
Then Farrell...
I thought Thomas Williams took his try well.
Thomas Williams...
He took his try well, he didn't do anything else.
He looked like a rabbit in headlights, frankly.
Yeah, and some of his passing, which contributed to some of those multiple knock-ons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Thomas Williams is a gem of a player, and by the World Cup, he's going to be probably Wales' starter, because I think he's brilliant. But just this weekend wasn't for him.
And Parra can't, because of his kicking. Youngs did play superbly well.
Yeah, Youngs is good. Laidlaw, because otherwise we're going to have to pick mostly in England.
Just all the England team.
Yeah, and then Farrell, and then probably Manu. A good argument.
So I liked Johnson, the Scottish boy, who played 12.
Yes, put him in at 12.
Now, he's a lad from Glasgow, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did well.
Put him in at
12. I actually thought Fofana did pretty well.
He was fairly quiet by his standards.
Mm. And I thought Ntamack at 13 actually did really, really well. He showed some real flashes.
Yeah, I want to see more of him. I'd like to see more of him. I'd like to see more of Pinal.
But Slade.
Oh, yeah. Got to get Slade. The 13 Slade.
Yeah,
Slade.
Yeah.
So we're going for Johnson, Farrell. So Laidlaw. So we've got two Scots.
Yeah.
Two Englishmen in the back line so far. Back three.
I'd have Hogg. I'd have May. And I'd probably have Kinghorn.
Yeah. Well,
maybe Liam Williams.
Maybe Liam Williams, yeah. Because he was the by far.
Liam Williams on the wing,
Hogg
at fullback.
Yes, yes, and Johnny May.
Johnny May, perfect. That is a perfect representation of exactly what happened this weekend.
And the fact that.
Which is, well, basically, Ireland didn't turn up.
Well, they did. They just got battered.
Yeah.
It was the pressure that England put them under, I think. And John Mitchell, huge credit.
Who's never been a defence coach, by the way.
I know. Huge credit.
Well, do you know what? And I will eat humble pie on the Eddie Jones thing.
Oh, that's good. That's big of you, Tim.
Because his conditioning methods, you just have to sort of say, well, fair enough. And whether it's down to the players that have done it themselves or maybe it's the clubs that have been involved, whatever the case, those players arrived in peak physical condition, as good as I've ever seen them. And the John Mitchell appointment, I was very, very unsure of. Not because I didn't think John Mitchell was a great coach, but because I thought this.
I don't think he's a great coach, for the record.
Well, his CV
would agree with me.
Would suggest, well.
Look, if you had a CV.
It's a very mixed CV.
Yeah, it is. You're right. It is. Yeah, you're right. But I thought because it's clearly another alpha male, and I thought, how on earth is this going to work with Eddie Jones?
I completely agree with that point.
John Mitchell did a number on Ireland.
So there's two interesting quotes from before the game, one from Eddie Jones and one from Joe Schmidt, talking about this. So the one from Eddie Jones was talking about his work rate and how he likes to work players. And he actually conceded that, or the way that I kind of interpreted it was he conceded that in the past, perhaps he has tried to work players too hard.
Definitely.
But he's almost, I can't remember the exact phrasing he used, but he's found a balance that he's getting the best out of both. Now, that was before the game. The other interesting comment was from Joe Schmidt. So do you remember last week where, I can't remember who, it might have been Mitchell, said, Ireland are going to bore us to death. There was a quote.
Yes.
Quote where Mitchell had said, Ireland are just going to try and bore us. They'll bore us to death. And someone asked Joe Schmidt, do you think you're going to bore England? And he was triggered. It was like he bit. It was like Jones and Mitchell were fishing and they caught a big Schmidt, because his reaction was, when we beat the All Blacks, do you think that was boring?
Ooh.
When we scored three tries against England in the first half last year, do you think that was boring?
And do you reckon, right, so just cast your mind back now.
Triggered meme that people do when they start convulsing in their chair?
No, just imagine this. So this is probably what happened, right? If we just imagine it's Dublin, pre-kickoff, Ireland are going to go out and execute a game, the same game plan they always execute.
The All Blacks game plan.
Yep. Schmidt kicks down the door, holds up this piece, the paper. These MFers, right, ripping up his game plan. Yeah. What we're going to do now is going to do this instead. I've had it. That's what happened.
So I'm absolutely certain he won't have changed a thing because of that. But it might have just had a slight impact on the decision-making.
Go out there and play completely differently, boys.
But just the decision-making from Sexton and Conor Murray as to when to run it and when to kick. There was times when they held on way too long before trying to kick, and there was times when they kicked too early and kicked badly. Just thought it was interesting.
As they say in, is it MMA or is it? It must be MMA because you don't punch in jiu-jitsu. But if you want to make a jiu-jitsu black belt into a brown belt, punch him in the face. Right. Exactly what they did to.
It's the old Mike Tyson quote, isn't it? Everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face.
Exactly.
It's the looking back at some of those quotes from Ireland sources, be it in newspapers or be it on Twitter, before the game, rolling around in the cesspit, you saw some things. And gave that quote from Eddie O'Sullivan earlier. I was just thinking, imagine the reaction that would have got in the week building up to the game or before the game or since, had it been someone English saying that? Had Clive Woodward come out and said...
This is you hating... This is you snitching on the Irish again, isn't it?
No, it is. No, actually.
I'd them being out too late in the 2003 World Cup. They were dwarf throwing as well, you know.
I just think...
What else did they do, Tim?
No, it's one of the things I love. It's one of the things I actually love about being an England fan is how much we're hated. And so there was nothing said about those comments. If Clive Woodward had given his opinion and said, I would only have maybe one, maybe two Irish players in an England 15, he would have got absolutely hammered. Arrogant Englishman.
And so he should have done going into the game if he'd have said that.
If he'd have said that, yeah, fair point. I just love it. I love the Six Nations so much.
It's good, isn't it? It's particularly weekends like this. So let's predict next week's games then, I guess. Unless we've got any other business.
No.
Well, so there was women's Six Nations and under-20s Six Nations. I think the only results I've seen, actually, are the England-Ireland games, where England women won handily 51-7, but the men's lost. So the Irish men's beat the English men's.
Good.
So there you go.
I tell you what, the one of the results of the weekend for me was Irish 20s beating England 20s.
That's exactly what I've just said.
Sorry, let me just mark that. There you go. I was reading a tweet.
Leave it.
No, no.
I was
reading a tweet there.
What tweet were you reading? Leave it in. This is real. What tweet were you reading?
I was reading a tweet from a guy called John Nicol, who was shot down over Iraq. And it turns out he actually once flew with one of my co-hosts on my other podcast, Pilot Episodes, called Anthony Parkinson. They flew tornadoes together. So he's just tweeted to say, I found you in my logbook. Looks like we flew together, which is a lovely story.
Very nice.
Mm. Very nice. I think that's worth explaining why your mind was elsewhere. That's fine.
Yeah.
So I also think that the under 20s game was the one thing we haven't talked about, the under 20s Ireland England game. That was a good result.
Yeah, it kind of. So as at Sale today, I interviewed Ross Harrison in the in the Sharky.
We need an electronic bell.
They've changed it from the Shark Tank to the Sharky.
The Sharky. They've also got. Now, don't make the obvious joke, okay, boys? Do not make it. Just think it. They've also got the Ruck Truck.
I want to say it.
Don't make the obvious joke. But they've got... there's a player who will be in the Ruck Truck today. Come and have your picture taken in the Ruck Truck. Oh, now, God. You know, we all know what the obvious joke there would be. So, I was watching Sale. In the Prem
Cup. Is it just a picture they offer in the Ruck Truck? Is there any?
It is just a picture. It's just a still.
Are there other off menu services?
Tim, I was very clear on this. Very clear. I was watching Sale in the Prem Cup, and one of the real shames about the Prem Cup this week, it's basically meant for the young players coming through, isn't it? If you know. And, you know, both teams had a few players come back from injury. Sale had a very impressive young, promising centre coming through.
Are you going somewhere with this? Cause...
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Johnny Leota, I don't know if you've...
Local lad.
But the problem was, the under 20s had played on Friday, so you didn't get to see all the players that you wanted to, either from Newcastle or from... Or from Sale, because of course they can't pick the under 20s, and they can't.
Yeah,
and they really want to pick their first teamers. So a bit of bad planning there by the Prem Cup guys. But there again, what can you do?
Yeah.
So yeah, I wanted to watch Nick Dolly and
Cam Redpath, Wilkinson.
It's loads of them.
Aaron Reed.
Oh, Wilkinson played actually.
Did it?
I'm so bored.
Why are you bored?
Let's go and predict next week's fixtures.
All right. So is it semi-finals of the Prem Cup?
Yep, I'll be at one of them.
Oh, excellent. Which one?
Don't know, because I'm just trying to work out. I think Newcastle have made the semi-finals.
Have they really? Yeah, they would have. Because
they got four tries. They had to get four tries.
I've got an email for it here. Here we go. Friday, 7:45, Worcester Warriors host Saracens. Worcester, who put out pretty much a first team.
Yeah, they did.
And Saturday, Northampton host Newcastle. Saturday, 12:15.
There you go. So... Exeter Chiefs missed out, pipped.
I think Northampton will win the whole thing. I think they're very, they've got lots of squad depth in their first 15, and also they've got some good young players who they can legitimately play.
Predictions for next week?
I think Northampton win.
No.
Oh, sorry,
no.
What?
Six Nations.
Six Nations, right.
Oh, Six Nations again.
What do you mean? We've not even spoke about the Kings and the Cheetahs yet.
In the Pro 14?
Yeah,
I didn't even see.
Don't know who won, but it did happen. Right, what were we talking about?
Saturday, 9th of February, 2:15 p.m. at Murrayfield, Scotland host Ireland.
No Friday night game this. It was like the only Friday night game of the tournament. I liked it.
I liked it as well. Yeah, I did.
I like it. I do like a Sunday game, though. My Sunday today has felt a bit empty.
I much prefer a Friday night game.
If you had to pick a Sunday, or what format would you pick? Because I definitely have a Friday night game if I could pick one. And then I think I'd have Sundays free. I'm fine with that.
So yeah, two Saturday games. Yeah.
I wouldn't mind.
One on each day would be
good. Here's what I would like, okay? I would like a big game on a Friday night, because that's really special. So not Italy. And then I want Italy on the first game of the next day.
Yeah.
Then I want the evening game.
Saturday night game.
Saturday night game. In fact, I'm all right with it if they have a 5 o'clock kickoff and then a 7 o'clock kickoff.
Yeah.
But also, you know, a 3 and a 5 is fine.
Yeah, which is similar to what we had. Yes.
But here's the kicker. Ready?
Go on.
All the under-20s games happen back-to-back on a Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So if you really want to nose out a little bit later on, feel free.
Yeah, that's
great.
Or
if you want to just know that there's rugby happening whilst you're doing other things besides rugby, then...
Yeah, you have that warm rugby feel whilst you mow the lawn.
You just check your phone and...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ireland are winning. Perfect. Ireland under-20s are winning.
Yeah, because I couldn't watch
Did Ireland under-20s win?
What? Game of the week?
Come on, then. So what have we got Saturday first up, did you say?
First up, 2:15, Murrayfield. Scotland host Ireland. Are we going to get the kickback, the backlash from the Ireland team? Because I think under normal circumstances, Ireland would win this. Not comfortably, but they would win.
Mm.
So are we going to get a reaction, positive or negative, from the Ireland team?
100%.
Positive?
They will be hurting. Yeah, you're going to get a reaction.
Yeah.
Has doubt crept into them?
So, I know exactly what you mean.
Mm.
I don't think it will. I think, knowing what I know about, particularly Schmidt and Sexton, they will almost go back to their basics, and they will work even harder on getting those basics right, and they'll have a very simple game this weekend of doing the basics right, get territory, get possession. Their line-out on scrum will be superb. Their penalty count, which was very low against England, will be even lower against Scotland. And they will probably have a bonus point win, is my prediction.
The only thing is, preparing for Scotland and what they're going to bring is literally night and day. No, it's not literally night and day at all. If I want it to literally sound, because that doesn't make any sense. It's not literally night and day. It's metaphorically night and day, right? Because England, that huge physical presence, whereas Scotland are going to try something a little bit different. They're going to be a lot flashier, and I think they're going to try and move the ball a lot quicker. So for that reason, you know, if you're Ireland, you're trying to take a lesson out of the England game, maybe those lessons aren't necessarily applicable to what you're going to see against Scotland. So just carry on doing what you're doing and hope for the best.
Yeah.
I expect Ireland to dominate physically. Bring the brutality that England brought to them and win.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Ireland win.
Bonus point win for Ireland. Scotland may well score 3 or 4 tries.
Just remember the devastating effect it had when England lost to Ireland when they were on for a second Six Nations Grand Slam. Yep, and maybe that is this result for Ireland.
The doubt, the long-term doubt. I know. I think Ireland have got better foundations than that.
Wales, Italy.
So, 4:45 in Rome. Italy hosting Wales.
Wales.
Unless it's raining.
If it's raining, then Wales again.
Yeah, probably still Wales, but it might be a bad first half again.
I love the Six Nations, but is it wrong? I can't. I am not inspired or excited by any game involving Italy.
No, I'm not.
Correct.
Either. The only time I'd be inspired by it is if we went back to Rome to watch it and got absolutely hammered on Negronis and extra dry martini at exorbitant prices.
That would be inspiring.
If that's the case, can we get there? If we were to...
I would watch every Italy game.
If we were to do that, then can we get there for the anthems this time?
Yes, the hacker.
I miss the hacker. Anyway.
Yeah, we've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it millions of times. It's a dance, basically. Yeah, so Wales for that one. And last but not least, France, England.
Before we just jump over that,
okay.
That's a problem, right? That is a yeah. problem that I'm thinking, oh, well, if I miss that, no worries. Oh, well, whatever.
That's exactly
yeah.
right.
It's a problem.
It is a problem.
Hmm. Yeah.
I do think it's... So, obviously, Italy need more time. But I guess the point I'm making is Conor O'Shea needs more time because we've already seen... the benefit of some of the changes he's made to the structure, the coaching setup, the overall setup, filtered down to JB's beloved Benetton and Zebre.
Mm.
And that it's not a quick fix. There is no silver bullet for this Italy side. But having good, solid foundations long-term can only help.
Yeah.
So I just...
You are right.
I don't want to destroy... If you got rid of Italy or replace them with Georgia...
No replacing. You would get rid of them. Well, you won't replace them.
Just... If anything happened like that, you'd completely destroy all the groundwork that has been happening for the past 20 years and might take another 10 or 20 years to actually come to fruition.
Mm. Well, no, I think they could have really good competitive games against Georgia and Romania. And
They would have more competitive. The problem is, I think Italy are too good.
Yeah, let's not get into promotion relegation.
Yeah.
Here's a deal I want all three of us to make. I do not want to talk about the idea of promotion relegation in the Six Nations this year. At all.
Can we talk about just going back to Five Nations?
Yeah, we can do that. But we're not talking about promotion or relegation. Is it worth noting that USA beat Chile 71-8?
I saw a couple of the tries. Lasica looking good through the middle.
Is it Lasicki?
Lasica.
Lasica? Lasicki? I know the one you mean.
The Quinns, former NFL fullback.
Chicago Bears guy. Argentina 15, I guess that's not the full 15, beat Brazil 54-3.
Yes, it's definitely not the full 15.
No. And Uruguay snuck past Canada. That'd be a good game, 2017.
It probably says more about Canada's current position.
Well, Uruguay are perennial World Cup attendees.
True.
And there are literally no one I recognise who played for Canada. So that's an interesting side note. Right, so France-England.
Yes.
France-England.
Now this one I have no worries getting excited about.
3 o'clock on Sunday at Twickenham.
Yes.
So can France, who beat England by manhandling them up front last year, in a team that was missing a few players, that England team, can France do it again in Twickenham with a team that has Manu and Billy? And that back row, just the balance of that back row is so good.
No, they can't.
Why?
They can't. And I would be... Because it's Twickenham.
Okay.
If it was Paris, I'd say, yeah, absolutely they could. But no, they're not going to.
I tend to agree, is the answer. I mean, the...
And I'm not saying that... I would say that if England had lost narrowly in Ireland or... In fact, if they'd lost at all, just... I'm not getting carried away. But England are going to win the World Cup. I'm not getting carried away, but...
Back-to-back World Cups, I heard.
But this is Twickenham.
Never going to lose another match.
This is Twickenham.
I do agree. I think it will be hard, and I think it will be a good test of that fitness and conditioning for England, because I think they will get very little change for maybe 40 or 50 or 60 minutes, and if they are as fit as they think they are, and they can empty their bench and keep that... onslaught going, then I think they could sneak away in the last 20 minutes or so.
I do think England will win this. But I can also map out a route as to how France win it.
Go on.
Which is by saying nothing I've not already said about France and nothing I've already not said about England. Interestingly, one of the things I thought about England this week and how hard they were working... I do think there's a sort of compounding effect where when it's going well, you can work harder. I'm sure we can all agree on that. You know, when you've got that buzz about the team and everyone...
Yeah,
you know,
the motivation, the getting up off the floor for your mates.
Yeah, and everyone's tapping each other on the back. Yeah, it's quality.
Marutoji, the games where Marutoji would do his signature hand clap.
Oh, see, he invented. I can't believe he invented clapping.
Quite that's remote. One of my favourite bits of commentary. I can't remember who said it. Was I told you with a signature hand clap?
Yeah, good old hand clapping. Now there is part of me that thinks if France can dominate the game line, which they absolutely can, early doors, so England can't get that initial push in the first 10 minutes. That'd be great. As would England's heads going down because they, you know, they can't use that dominant style of play. And then it's over to Owen Farrell, who loses his head. He probably tries to do a high shot and probably pick a mole because he can't handle him. That's a red or a yellow. England are rudderless and leaderless, have lost their kicker. France then cruise to victory. That's how I see it going down.
That's how you dream.
Sorry, dream. That is the dream. In reality, I think England probably bonus point them for some reason.
You, for that particular dream, you might need a room on your own.
Yeah.
A darkened room on your own and some private time.
Well, you know, what might require that exact scenario would be if Teddy Thomas was fit. And to watch Teddy Thomas not tackling Johnny May and then Johnny May not tackling Teddy Thomas for 80 minutes. That would be phenomenal.
Just those two running at each other.
Give it Teddy!
Has there been a bigger transformation in what people think of a player than Johnny May?
I don't think so, actually. Because I've always liked Johnny. I mean, particularly since he's been at Leicester, I think he's come on leaps and bounds. But when I pick an England team, I always pick Johnny May. Very rarely do I not. But maybe the public perception is...
Well, can we rewind? And when you absolutely ripped it out of Phil for saying that he's...
Oh, yeah, I did, didn't I?
...consistently world-class.
Well, yeah. Well, he wasn't consistently world-class, and that's exactly...
Well, that's the point.
Oh, no. But that is the point, isn't it?
That is the point.
That is the point, yeah. Because it's changed.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. He is. See, yeah. I was right so, all
no, no,
along.
No, Phil I was right it. Then, and I'm right now.
No, I was right all
Phil
along.
Was previously wrong, and now he is right.
That right there... Yeah. That right is that's JB in a nutshell. If you just tuned into the pod, rewind 10 seconds and listen to that again and again, and that's pretty much it.
it takes a while, but we get there.
The world of politics is waiting, JB. When are you going to do it?
Never. Right. So we're all saying England win.
Yes, but I think it's not beyond the realms of possibility for a scenario like the one that you described, that dystopian future for England.
Utopian future for France.
For France. That is possible. Manu as well. Manu, early on in the game, put in a couple of shots on Rooks, one on Stockdale,
yeah.
Where there was no attempt to bind on. A different referee or touch judge or TMO spots that. And he could have been.
I tell you what,
10 minutes in the bin.
Stopping power is important. Stopping power is always important, and on England's side, it could be massively important because France, once they bend you, once they get over the game line, it's the offloading game. It's that Parisian racing style game, which is so dangerous.
Racing and Toulouse at the moment,
yeah. So that's pretty dangerous too.
But we didn't see any of that this weekend because the conditions.
Bits of it.
A little bit.
We saw the bending the line bit, certainly.
Yeah, we saw a bit of that.
I think as much as France can stop England, I think England can stop France. And that's a sort of an element which I've not really thought of. But hey, let's see how it pans out.
Very, very quickly before we go. So, Brodie Retallick to Sale Sharks has been rumoured.
Lol.
This is like last week, the person who's put forward this rumour is someone who went in hard on people...
Oh.
Reporting the Joe Launchbury rumour, didn't they? So Neil Fissler of the Rugby Times is having gone in on people that predicted Joe Launchbury would go to Sale and that didn't happen. He's now predicted Brodie Retallick, which makes me think it must be true. Otherwise, Neil Fissler's going to look really, really stupid.
I can 100% tell you, 100%, it is not true. It is not true. They are not signing Brodie Retallick.
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 Brodie Retallick.
Be a hell of a signing if they did.
Maybe they've got their eyes on someone else. Who knows? I certainly don't.
You don't know anything, do you, JB?
No, I do not. So I'm pretty sure Brodie Retallick. I don't know. Maybe he is coming. Maybe he is. But I don't think he is. Who knows?
Be a good signing if you could get him.
Leicester Tigers have signed someone. Would you like to know?
Tom Vandell.
No, someone from Canterbury, but I can't actually remember exactly who it is. Give me 2 seconds. Jordan Tafua from Canterbury? Mean anything to anyone?
No.
No? Well, he signed for Leicester, so that's exciting, isn't it?
Good.
Yeah, well, Wooden Tigers, that will win you the league. Let's all go home.
All right. Go and watch that video on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. JB is at JB Moore as well.
I am.
I'm at Cocker. Phil is lurking.
In your DMs.
Always lurking.
Sliding into your DMs. And we may have grown our audience by one by this time next week. So,
yes.
Good luck, Philip.
Thanks, mate.
And we might not even have you here.
I'll be here.
Good lad.
Unless I'm in hospital next Sunday, I'll be here.
Well, if you are, we'll get someone else in.
Yeah, someone better, someone more knowledgeable. Someone wearing a Sail Shark shirt, no doubt.
Maybe. Who knows? Can I just say, John O'Ross has moved in down the road.
Where?
Really?
Literally on this road.
He's on this road?
On this very road, yeah.
Is he in a nicer house than yours?
No. He doesn't have a dungeon. So I was going to surprise you boys with John O'Ross today, actually, but him and Sam James have got some event on of some description.
He's a devilishly handsome man, John O'Ross.
Yeah. He asked me how he could get more Twitter followers. I told him, be more interesting. Which is absolutely fair.
That is totally fair.
That's totally fair. So Johnny Ross maybe will be popping in sometime soon.
And he might also be... I hope he's not handing over his Twitter account to you. That's all I can say. I can't wait to see Johnny Ross tweeting about Jeremy Corbyn. Bring it on.
Very, very strong views on that.
Let the boys play.
Indeed, let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.